Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and of course on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham and we have put our cup dreams on hold for now in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it's not been a great week on Planet Albion. First, we suffered our first defeat in four visits to Old Trafford as Man United put four past us to take the points. There were positives to take from that game, though, as Danny Welbeck became our highest top-flight goal scorer as he went past Michael Robinson's 42-year-old record. And also, we saw a first Albion goal for Charalampos Kostoulas. And then, on Wednesday, despite a bright first half, we didn't take our chances at the Emirates, and it's Arsenal who go through to the next round. And also, other bad news this week came at Derby, as Albion's women's striker Michelle Agyemang was stretchered off playing for England and has suffered a season-ending ACL injury. And our best wishes go to Michelle. So, this weekend, we're back on home soil and we welcome a Leeds United side who have adjusted well so far to life back in the top flight. But can we get back to winning ways? Well, to help us find out, joining myself and Alan Wares today is a man who starred for both clubs, playing 45 times for Leeds. And in over three spells, he played 61 times for the Albion, scoring twice, including a beauty at Elland Road. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the one and only Mr. Sebastian Carroll. Applause, please. Applause. Hello, Seb. How are you?
Mesdames et messieurs, applause.
That was great. Great French accent as well.
Merci.
Don't tell me.
Thank you, guys. Love the intro.
Well, I mean, thanks for joining us, Seb. It's been a while since you've been here, but I have to ask, three times at the Albion, you must have really liked Brighton as a place.
Oh, because I have no other choice. Who knows? No, honestly, no. I remember my first spell quite well. Players I've played with, teams I've played against. All honesty, second spell, third spell, I kind of put in a somewhere in my brain and try to forget about it because it wasn't the greatest time for me at Brighton. Not because of the club, but because I don't think my performances were up to the standard I used to a few years back during my first spell.
I think that's okay. I think that's a little bit harsh because I think it was one of your return visits. You were with us for a season. And I'm trying not to be too harsh here, but with blatant honesty, I'm going to say that probably the first, I don't know, half to two-thirds of the season, I thought you were on fire. And then when it comes to choosing the player of the season award, a lot of people do end up sort of falling back on recency bias. And only remember the last third of the season. So, I mean, as much as you're saying, you know, you weren't as good, I mean, I think what you feel possibly and what we see might actually maybe be two different things.
Maybe. I was in a different state as well. When I first signed for Brighton back in 2005, I was young. I had this youth hunger that you want to succeed, whether you succeed with your football club or personally because you get transferred to a better club. I had that. The second spell, I had just left Leeds, not on my own terms, and I don't think I was in the right mind, to be fair. I did try my best, but I don't think I could have done better. That's for sure.
Okay, well, what we're going to do, we're going to come back to that a little bit later on. But first, I want to go back to the beginning because it was like you were born in Pontoise, which is just outside Paris, isn't it?
Pontoise, yeah, that's just north of Paris, yes.
But you somehow ended up at Monaco when you were 14. How did that come about?
So I was playing grassroots football as any other kid. Started at Cergy Pontoise Football Club, which is in the 95th district in a suburb of Paris. Mm-hmm. Started when I was nine. Played for the club up to when I was 13. Then, do you know when you... the football clubs, grassroots football, they send their best player to district football, then regional football, and you're part of your district teams. then you've got a chance, if you do well, to be part of your regional team. And then comes when you're 14, there's an under 14 national cup where all region in France play each other. And that's where you get scouted, or where you get the best chance to be scouted by football clubs, because it's every football clubs in France will send at least two scouts to every game. Mm-hmm. So if you're part of that, you've got a great chance to be scouted if you perform. And I had the chance to join Île-de-France, which is where I'm from, which is a Paris area. Mm-hmm. Then I performed really well with the team. And lucky enough, Monaco came by, watched me, contacted my parents, contacted the football club, says they were interested in inviting me over for a few days, visit the facilities, me and my family. And I think it went very fast, because within a couple of months after they first contacted us, I was in a flight to Monaco just to train with the team, visit the facility, potentially schools and everything. My parents liked it. I liked it.
It's a bit warmer, isn't it?
It is warmer. South of France, it's really nice. Then decided to move a year after. And the reason why I moved a year after they contacted me was because in France, I was in doing your kind of equivalent of the GCSEs.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
They wanted me to finish that first before moving on. So I stayed another year.
Yep.
Joined Monaco in 1997. Oh, my God. You heard to say that.
Because at that time, and Monaco were not just one of the bigger teams in France. They were one of Europe's sort of giants. So, I mean, do you recall the sort of the moment when you were told, well, actually, Monaco are interested in you?
Honestly, when Monaco came back, because there was a few clubs. Paris Saint-Germain was one of the clubs. Nantes was there. AS Cannes, which at the time, you might not know, but at the time was one of the biggest academies in France as well, which is a club south of France. Mm-hmm. When Monaco came, didn't even hear about any other solicitation.
you wouldn't?
No, honestly, because there was such a great team. They were playing such a great football. And you know the players that we've had, Arsene Wenger, was the manager, John Tigana took over. You had the like of George Weah. Before my time, did we have Glenn Hoddle? I think we had.
Glenn Hoddle, Mark Haley.
Yeah, I think we had, yes, we had. It wasn't my time, but you knew about the story of the club. You knew what they were about. So there were no questions for me but to join Monaco.
Yeah, I know quite a bit about the French teams from about there. I used to have holidays in France when we were kids all the time, and we always used to make sure we got a copy of Ons magazine, and I absolutely loved it. And there was the one that had, there was always one in, at the time of year when we were there, and it had all the team picks of all the teams in Ligue 1 at the time. I know I was obsessed by the French football kits at the time. And it was like, you know,
massive
adverts and stuff. Oh, I loved it.
The French national kit has always been a bit tasty, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's been good.
Whether it's the pinstripes in the days of Platini and Tiganar and Rocheteau and people like that.
Yeah. The Saint-Étienne kits were always lush.
Allez les Verts, yeah. I mean, even going back as far as Just Fontaine in 1958, where they had an enormous, I'm going to say this carefully, an enormous cock on their tit. Melita's going to just absolutely slay me for that one.
You're talking about Le Coq Sportif, of course.
Yes, well, it's the French national symbol, isn't it? It's the equivalent of the three lions. But even that kit, you know, was worn by him. Now, for the kids amongst you that don't realise, Just Fontaine was the leading scorer in the 1958 World Cup. And in fact, when it comes to any World Cup tournament, he is the leading scorer for a single tournament. He got 13 goals in that one tournament. And even then, I think he only played five or six games. Yeah.
But that's a nice little segue there, because your manager at Monaco around that time was a man who, one of few people actually, who've actually won the World Cup as a player and as a manager. And that was, of course, Didier Deschamps.
Is the one, so that people might not know, before Didier Deschamps joined, I was introduced to professional football by Claude Puel.
Yep.
Which you might know because he was at Leicester and Southampton here in the Premier League.
Yep.
He's the one who kind of brought me in that professional world by inviting me to train with the first team. I had a few friendlies which I enjoyed. Then he left. Then Didier Deschamps came. And as a young player, you've got to start over and convince that you're good enough to be there, which I did, lucky enough. I've worked hard, and Didier Deschamps was, he liked me. He liked the way I was playing, so gave me a chance to train with the team and play a few games.
What did he ever tell you, what in his opinion, what did he see in you that he liked?
I think it was my flair and my game IQ as well. Uh-huh. I could play as a number 10 or as a winger, or even as a centre midfield. He could use me as a very versatile midfielder. And I remember every time I was about to go on, or he was about to play me, he used to come at me and have a little chat and say, "Are you ready? Because I'm going to play you this weekend." There's no pressure. You play as a number 10, do whatever you want. So this is the best word a young kid, play as a number 10, could hear, is just go out there and enjoy yourself, basically.
Well, this is it. I mean, when it comes to, you know, I suppose probably by the time you get to 14, 15, 16, then you've got to obviously hone your, not just your skills, but your tactics as to what any given coach or tactician wants. I suppose when you're talking about 8 or 9, it's about going out and enjoying yourself. But when he said enjoying yourself, it must have been within the framework of, you know, some kind of tactical setup he had.
Yeah, of course. If you know Didier Deschamps now, he hasn't won everything that he's won by just getting to people to play with complete freedom.
Otherwise, you'd only have 10 outfield Glenn Hoddles, wouldn't you?
No, exactly. No, I think it was more some wise word to a young player to kind of decrease that pressure that you could feel. But of course, you've got to be a certain discipline on the pitch. And we worked very hard, tactically speaking. But I knew about the team and I knew what he wanted from me anyway. Defensive wise and attacking wise.
Was that Deschamps' first job?
No, I think, was that his first job or was he at Juve before? See, that's so long ago. I can't remember if it was his first job.
Can I make a suggestion here, Sebastian? Because we were just talking about this before we came on air here. Look to your left and Google it.
I was going to suggest it. Do you want me to cheat?
Yes, please cheat. No, I'll tell you what. AD's going to. He's doing the googling right now. So, how long was it you were working under or with Deschamps at Monaco?
So Deschamps joined, I think, was it 2003?
You're asking me. You were there, mate.
Yeah, I left 2005, so 2 years. Yeah.
It was his first managerial job.
Was it his first managerial?
Yeah, he began in 2004. He then won Serie B with Juventus in 2007.
He went to Juve after that, yeah.
And then he went to Marseille and then to the French national team. So
then we know what he's doing after that, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've got more of a lowdown on Deschamps than we have on Seb Carroll so far. So,
there was some sort of a pathway at Monaco, but you were given an opportunity. Did you get a little bit impatient and just want to be playing the whole time?
I think that's why I left so early. Because I've signed my first professional contract in 2003. And if you see on any website, Wikipedia, you can see that I left to sign for Brighton in 2005.
Yeah.
I had 3 years contract. Basically, I think, yeah, that was the right word. Being too impatient. You've got to realize I've signed for a club that literally went to the Champions League final. And losing against Porto, that was coached and managed by Jose Mourinho. And as a young player, instead of enjoying that with a team and learn from them, learn from experienced player and a great manager, you kind of, I want to be there. I want to be playing week in, week out. But you're 19, 20 years old, just learn and be patient. Your time will come. And I don't think I had that in me, so that's probably why I left. Fair play to the manager.
Because you went to West Ham you played 3 minutes.
Yes.
And I mean, in a team that had Bobby Zamora in it, actually. But
Can I just point out here that AD's not going to be horrible all hour.
No, not at all. No. But, yeah, you wait till I get to talking about Palace.
No, please don't. Anyway.
But yeah, so I mean, when you went over to West Ham, it was I think you just recently got married, and it was coming over to. I mean, this is something we talk a lot about on this show because there's a lot of expectation about players coming over to UK. A lot of the time, as young kids leaving home for the first time, and there's a lot of pressure on them to perform immediately. But it's not as simple as that, is it?
No, it's not. And honestly, this is some, like, I talked to my kid, my eldest one, he's 21 years old, he plays football as well. And I'm trying to advise him on my experience so he doesn't repeat my mistake. And I don't want him to kind of not repeat what I've done because we all got our own experiences. But the loan to West Ham was probably the worst decision I could have made in my career. Simple fact is that we're in a season where we are playing the league, we're playing our French Cup, the French Carling Cup, the Champions League. So there's loads of games for a young player to be involved in. Mm. And yet, I was too impatient and I wanted to play straight in. So January came, West Ham offered Monaco to take me on loan. And what happened is, by the time they make that offer to Monaco, and when I join West Ham, 2 weeks have elapsed. At the time. And during that 2 weeks, I think they recruited about two or three wingers, which I wasn't aware of.
So we do that a lot as well, actually.
Yes, yeah. Well, funny fact is that they did went for three, like two or three wingers. And it was the last day of the transfer window in January, the 31st of January. And I had switched off my phone because I thought, this is dead. I'm not going to go to West Ham now. Uh-huh. And then I decided to turn my phone back on at about like 4 p.m. And then the phone rang and it said, you need to go in the office and sign your loan agreement.
All right.
I was like, my wife at the time said, don't go. It's not the right time. She was pregnant with our first. We just got married the year before. And there's a time for everything. And I didn't read that. I said, no, this is a really great opportunity. I need to go there. Sign the contract. And as you mentioned, I've played altogether 3 minutes for West Ham, where I could watch all my teammates enjoying their time with the Champions League, get to the final. And I've probably the best seasons I've ever had with the club.
Yeah, because you did actually play in the Champions League for Monaco.
I played the group stages part, but I've missed the most exciting one.
There's actually one question. It's actually something you said a couple of minutes ago. And it just made me think of something else. Now, obviously, you're talking about you coming through the ranks as a youth, sort of. Well, we're talking probably not far short of 30 years ago. Well, we are talking 30 years ago now.
Yeah.
And what? And what my point here is that you said that you've got your son and he's playing football as well now, and you said you don't want him to make the same mistakes. Now that then sort of like leads me to think, well. I'm thinking in terms of how the Albion recruit their youngsters and all the sort of like the holistic approach they have to not just learning football, but education and social skills and things like that. One, was that sort of thing still not happening at Monaco by then? Because I'd like to think that I think the rest of us think that the European clubs were a little bit, well, quite a way ahead in terms of social progression. But also, did you not have that, even that mentor? Because obviously you're talking about Deschamps being there. Now, he's a great coach. But did you have a mentor, or did you have a almost like a Sven Gali or someone who could actually just say, look, Seb, you're a great player. Be patient. Did you have that person?
I had a few, to be fair. And it's just being so stubborn, not listening, not trusting, not believing, not having faith. First of all, Didier Deschamps was one of them because he took me for a chat in a kick room. And I remember that chat. And he said, the championship, which was called the Division 2 at the time, or Division 1.
Yeah,
at the time, like that, yeah. Division 1. He said, it's not suit for you. It's not your game. You won't enjoy it. I guarantee you will play. We've got a lot of competition to play. You're a good player. You know I like you. You know you can bring something to the team. Just be patient. You'll have your time. And he said, don't go there. I need you. So you've got your manager coming to you and explaining that he needs you, and you're still going away. Why?
Because you're young and stubborn?
Exactly. So I had him first, and I had a couple of experienced players in the squad. that just came and talked to me a lot and saying, like, say, be patient, you're a good player. Just play whenever you can. If you have to go to back to the reserve just to keep it, do it. You'll have your time. It will come because you're a good player. So I had a couple of players in that squad that tried to help me understand the situation better. I just didn't listen.
Yeah. What was it? What was it? Is it just part of your personality, your character that didn't listen? I mean, did you have ideas above you that even Deschamps sort of didn't have about you?
No, it's not. It's not that. I love football so much that I want to be playing every week, and it didn't matter where. I just want to be. I just wanted to play. So I could have gone to a third or fourth division club just because they were offering game time.
Got you.
Where nowadays, football players, even at a young age, they know what's at stake. If you know what I mean, if you go like a young player playing for Arsenal, let's say, like we know the size of the squad they have and the budget that they have to recruit players. Honestly, if a manager comes to if the manager comes to you and say, "I need you, be patient," it just wait, because he knows like it's Arsenal. They're playing Champions League year in, year out.
Yeah.
They're playing FA Cup games. They're playing all kind of cup. Just be patient. At the time, I didn't have that. I just wanted to play. It didn't matter. I wasn't trying to work out what's best for my career.
I was about to say, you weren't really thinking ahead with your career. You just wanted to go out there and by the sound of things, be a big kid and just play football.
Simple as, yeah. And towards my end of career, if we come to it, you'll see that I was ready to play football just for free.
I did notice. Well, we're going to come to that bit in a minute. But, yeah. but you went back to France. Did you? You looked like you went out online to Châteauroux.
I did, yeah. I thought it was a good idea. How it happened is that, so came back from West Ham, which, by the way, Alan Pardew was a manager, and I've asked him, "Do you need me?" And he said, "Yes, I need you." So I stayed because I had a chance to go back to Monaco, just terminate the loan and go back to Monaco. But he said he needed me, but he never played me. Anyway.
Yeah, we like him too.
Al's just seen my face.
So end of the loan, I had a call from the Lorient manager, Christian Gourcuff. And he said, "I want to take you on loan next season." And I knew what he was about. He liked to play football and the football that I like playing. So he called me twice and I said, "Okay, I'm going to join. If you can contact the club, I'll come on loan to Lorient." Then Châteauroux was in partnership with Monaco at the time. And the sporting director of Monaco decided for me to go on loan to Châteauroux instead of Lorient, where I've had already given my word to the manager saying that I will join him. So Monaco decided otherwise and said, "You're going to go to Châteauroux, you're not going to go anywhere." And again, I wanted to play. So I thought, okay, if the club send me there, that means they need me there and I'm going to be playing. So I went to Châteauroux and, oh my God, I don't want to talk to them about the manager because that was just horrible.
Talk about another manager. And that was the one that somehow managed to convince you to come to the south of England and a little place on the coast called Brighton. And that was a guy called Mark McGee. Obviously, Dick Knight was at the club as well. Now, we know Dick. We know Dick very, very well. And we know exactly how persuasive he can be.
I mean, that is straight off the cock on the tit saying that you know Dick very well.
Oh, God.
Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, well, we know exactly how persuasive Dick can be. So he obviously never shows you the stadium.
You're not helping yourself here by saying that, AD.
What happened? How did you end up here?
So I had 1 year left at Monaco, just came back from a failed loan to Châteauroux. And again, still wanted to play because I had almost a blank season. I've only probably played a handful of games for Châteauroux. So my agent called me probably 2 days before my son's first birthday and say, you need to go to Brighton. So you need to fly over, have a few days, train and see how it goes. and he went really well. And they just offered me a 2 years contract.
Hang on a second. Hang on. You went over to Brighton to train in probably one of the worst training facilities you've ever come across.
Yes, probably, yeah.
So, I mean, what happened with a lot of players is that they came over and said, OK, show them the training facility. And Dick would say, no, let's take them to the Grand Hotel. Did you get the bubble bath at the Grand Hotel, or did you get the tour of the what passed for facilities?
No, I stayed in a hotel called the Belgrave Hotel. I think it was in a town center. That's right. Where I stayed for a few days.
Yeah.
Train to the training ground that before they had the actual one today, which is really nice, by the way. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, they even asked me to wash my own kit. And I was like, what?
I was going to say, did they have a washing machine at the hotel?
No. They borrow you a kit and you've got to wash your own kit. That was back in 2005. That's the way it was.
Yeah. I mean, probably about 5 seconds after you signed, you thought, what have I done?
Not really, because honestly, when I had a chat, I couldn't speak a word of English, and Mark McGee has a really strong Scottish accent.
Yeah, he can't speak a word of English either.
I'm not sure Bob Booker could either, to be honest.
But no, he said I'm gonna need you this year, and I've joined the club, and sure away, I felt the love from everyone at the club. It's simple as that. When you feel considered, you just forget about your environment. It doesn't matter if the training ground is not nice. Within stadium, everybody used to say it's our banana split. Coming to play against Brighton at the Within stadium. Honestly, I disregarded all of that just because I was enjoying myself.
Tell us about your first thoughts when you worked. Walked in the door when you first sort of turned up at the Sussex University training camp. I mean, did you get a warm welcome? Did you get the bucket of water over there? What, tell us about your first impressions of the your teammates.
I felt liked straight away by everyone. Honestly, Colin Kazim Richard, he helped me with a lot of stuff. First day, he said, anything that you need, just give me a shout. He helped me move in, helped me find a flat, told me about how to register with a GP.
So did he tell you where to get a washing machine from?
I think I could find my own way for that. But no, the whole team, really nice. Charlie Otway, he was our skipper. Just fantastic attitude. They knew I couldn't speak a word of English. I was still young. Don't know if I can say it, but no one tried to take the piss. They just like, I feel welcome straight away. And even if you speak to other French lads that just joined after me, which is like Florent Chenieux or Alexandre Frutos, they'll tell you the same.
That's kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, this is a city that we like to think that we're sort of open and welcoming, and it's a fairly liberal city, it's a relaxed city, and what have you. And like I say, someone who's French, we're not going to let people, things like language be a barrier to friendship and hospitality. So who was it that sort of, really knuckled you down? Please tell me it wasn't Charlie Otway that taught you English.
It was Guy Butters.
Honestly, if you learn from Charlie Otway, you're in trouble.
You are.
I think my English today is okay. I think I can get by. I think people understand me. I think
better than that, mate. Believe me.
Thank you. It wouldn't be for Charlie.
No.
If I had learned from him, I'd be in trouble.
Yeah, I think we've learned anything from him. When the likes of Charlie and Paul Rogers, who admittedly was in the office at the club by then, and a few others, when they first joined, they liked to have training sessions that were pretty mad. And one of Mark McGee's predecessors, Peter Taylor, he always says that on his first day of training, and it was the day before a game, they would have an absolutely psychotic training session where basically they're trying to smash, in this instance, Nathan Jones and Paul Brooker. Now, as you being brought in as a winger, did they try and do that to you?
No, not that I remember.
Maybe
are you going to tell me they got nowhere near you?
They couldn't touch me.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that are tougher than Paul Brooker, to be honest. But it's like,
I'm not.
Hang on, AD, so go on, Seb.
No, sorry, I'm not going to lie, but again, I'm going to mention Colin Kazim-Richard because he said, I'm kind of weak physically. When I joined, I had absolutely no muscle mass on me. And I said, I don't need it, mate, because you can't catch me.
And that, to be honest, is how I remember your play. It was a case of, you know, if it was going to be a sort of a shoulder to shoulder, you were going to come second. But if it was going to be a foot race, the other defender wouldn't have stood a chance. That's how I remember you from what, sort of 18, 20 years ago. And it's very exciting watching you play.
No, thank you. I was trying to avoid the physicality because I didn't have it. As you said, if I was coming shoulder to shoulder with anyone in that league, that would trash me.
But, I mean, talking about CKR, Colin Kazim-Richards, I mean, he went on, obviously, he was the Coca-Cola kid. He was how he came to be here. But his career trajectory went on to be quite spectacular, really. I mean, he went on to play for Turkey and in the Euro, in the World Cup, and went to a massive moves into Europe and obviously here as well. It was an amazing career for him.
Honestly, I didn't know about this Coca-Cola Championship lad at the time. I don't know what he was and how. Only he was known as the kid who joined the Coca-Cola Championship.
That's it.
But his career after Brighton, just unexpectedly, because he was a really good player. I'm saying unexpectedly, no out of respect, but just you wouldn't have expected that. I wouldn't have bet on that. But I think he's done so well for himself, and I'm glad for him.
Absolutely.
But I mean, there was a lot of characters in that team. I mean, I'm just looking at the team that you made your debut. I mean, can you remember that team that when you made your debut? Without Googling it?
Hang on. First things first, who was he playing? Yeah. Who was the game against?
Well, there's a nice little bit of symmetry here because the 3 minutes he played for West Ham were against Crewe. And his debut for the Albion was also against Crewe.
Was it? Sickening by then.
Did we win? No, tell me we won.
West Ham won.
Brighton never beat Crewe.
No, come on. I want to check that.
All right, come on. Give us the lowdown. What was it at home? What was the date?
We drew.
The date was the 13th of August 2005, and it was a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, Leon Knight and Dina Mansfield.
Hang on,
exactly
do you know what he's doing? I mean, we don't video this, but we're going to video this. He's looking to his left where he's just told us he's got a second screen.
I'm
he's
not.
Googling everything.
Okay.
Hang on, he's not just Googling, he's giggling.
Right, because he's got it on the screen next to him, in front of him, I'm going to ask you what the team was.
Oh, I've no idea. Well, it must have been Kuipers in goal, surely.
No, it wasn't. It was your favourite.
Henderson.
Henderson. Adam Elab right back. No.
Who was right back?
You're trying to work
Paul
out.
Paul Reed was right back.
Paul Reed yeah. Right back. You had Guy Butters and as a centre back, and who?
Would it have been Virgo?
No.
No, Adam Virgo came after.
Or was it Hinch?
No.
Was it Cullip still?
No.
Who was the other centre back? So Guy Butters and.
Colin,
there was a big game later on that season, and there was a bit of a burning smell coming from the stadium that day.
No idea what you're on
and
about.
Someone scored the winner.
Nah. Oh, Paul McShane.
Paul McShane.
Yes.
So, must have been Kerry Mayo at left back.
No, I'll give you a tick. We've got a lot to
get.
Be
a
so it was Henderson, Jason Dodd, which you would never have got
Jason
in a million
Dodd,
years.
Yeah,
Paul McShane, Guy Butters, Seb Carroll, Chippy. Charlie Oakway, Paul Reed, Dean Hammond, CKR, Leon Knight. Dubs were Richard Martin, Adam Elad, Alexis Nicholas, Federico Torienza.
Federico, Argentinian guy. So nice. Yeah. He was so really nice lad.
Well, I'm glad you saw him because no one else did.
I know, but he was such a nice guy.
Well, nice guys come last, don't they? Yeah.
But, I mean,
Who scored?
It was Leon and
Knight and Dino. Yeah.
So I mean, there was like there's some big characters still around. I mean, Gary Hart was still around as well. He was injured in that game, but Charlie Oakway, obviously, Guy Butters, Richard Carpenter. These are all big characters that got us two promotions and to get us into the championship in the first place. So when you come into a dressing room like that, they must have been. Like lauding it, pretty much. There must have been absolutely massive characters in there.
Oh, no, there were. Charlie Otway, more than anyone else in that dressing room. That guy, I honestly say, and if I speak to him tomorrow, I'll tell him, but he's got about 10 different personalities in his brain. Well, he's got 11 names.
He has, yeah.
Yes.
Ten personalities, none of which are a footballer. I didn't say that. I'm going to edit that out. Yeah.
Yeah, and his name isn't really Charlie. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I knew it's not, but I know he's got like 11 or 12 names. And he said that, he mentioned that once after we asked him. I honestly couldn't remember all his names.
All you have to do is go and look up the QPR side from 1973. There you go.
Yeah. Oh.
That's who he's named after.
It is.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, and... basically, Charlie's not one of them.
Yeah, it's because his aunt...
And Charlie's not one of them.
It's not one of them. No. His aunt said he looked like a right proper Charlie.
And that's the name that stuck.
Yep. Oh, God, wow. What a story.
Let's fast forward a little bit to... I mean, that you made your debut, that was August. There was a game on the 10th of September 2005, which basically... It kind of changed quite a lot for you, really, I think, because it was a game at Ellen Road, and it was the 3-3 game. You scored and assisted. You're man of the match that day. You're absolutely fantastic. And I think Leeds hated it so much they didn't want to face you again, so they signed you. But it was...
That's pretty what happened.
Yeah, pretty. Yeah. It is.
You can't join them, beat them. Yeah.
But I mean, from a Brighton point of view, obviously going to that stadium, I mean, it must have had an impact on you.
Yes. Well, it was such a nice atmosphere. It was just unbelievable.
Can I just point out here, though? Sorry to cut across you there, Seb. You are the first person in English football history to ever say that Ellen Road has a nice atmosphere. It's not nice.
Well, it might not nice, but it doesn't feel like it feels nice when you're playing.
Yeah, when you're playing for them.
But at the time it was early in the season, so I still can't speak English. All I hear is people cheering for me.
Yeah, I think so even you can tell the difference between a cheer and a boo, though.
No, you could, but honestly, all I could hear is some noise. And, well, as a player, that's what you want. That's what that brings excitement. Yeah. It doesn't matter whether it's like for you or against you, but if it's against you, it motivates you to do even better.
I mean, certainly from an Albion point of view, that obviously we've somehow managed to make, well, while we're at with Dean, we managed to spend three seasons in the second tier, which is I still think is an astonishing achievement. But what it did do for the club was made us realise just how poor with Dean was. Because when you're playing at Upton Park and when you're playing at Ellen Road and when you're playing at Portman Road and you're playing at Filbert Street and what have you, you know, this is, you know, this, we want a bit of this. So did you kind of think, no, I'm playing for Brighton, it doesn't matter? Or did you kind of really get your head turned by the bigger stadiums?
You look forward to play bigger teams because you know it's going to be like a great crowd turning up, amazing facilities. So, no, you look forward to it. As a player, you always want it like to the best stadium with the best facilities, in front of the biggest crowds possible, just to showcase your talent and probably display a win for the team.
Absolutely.
So, as a player, you look forward to it.
Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited, Alan.
We are indeed. Thank you very much indeed to David Costa, who is sponsor of our show. Many, many thanks. Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And here's what they say about themselves, and I'm more than happy to agree with them. Whatever your reason for sending flowers or gifts, we can help. If it's a birthday, anniversary, birth, celebration, thank you, sympathy, sorry, or anything else, we have the answer. We're going to say sorry to Seb for inviting him on the Albion Roar because, frankly, he doesn't deserve that. If it's a wedding or corporate event, our team will come up with something to wow you. If it's a funeral, we can guide you in choosing a tribute that really reflects the life of your loved one. Trust us to provide the service and quality you really deserve. So if you go to flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk, you head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. And if you do go there and fancy buying anything for a loved one or a hated one, it's up to you. do tell them you're an Albion season ticket holder and they'll give you a 20% discount, which is actually quite a nice prize to have if you're sending something to someone you hate.
It's funny you should say that, because you know what they don't sell?
What don't they sell?
They don't sell Marmite. Now, Sam, you love Marmite, don't you?
Yes, good boy.
You guys watch that clip.
I watch that clip. I don't think Al knows anything about it.
I don't. What is this then? What have I missed?
So basically, he was a guest on another show, and basically they found out that he'd never tried Marmite. And so he said he would do it, and he'd do it on camera. And he did it. And, well, Kieran Maguire would not be very happy with the outcome.
Well, no, in that case, just to reverse that, not that I have the same standing as Kieran Maguire, I'm going to put the equaliser in there for Brighton fans and say, well done, Seb. Love you even more.
You don't like Marmite?
No, I do love Marmite.
No, he doesn't.
Kieran.
Kieran does.
Oh, hang on. I'm confused
here. It's me he's talking about.
Yeah.
Right, actually, it's AD.
Yeah.
You do this bit again, because I've got confused.
Well, Al, you know what they don't sell?
Is it Marmite?
You know what they don't sell, Al?
There's many things they don't sell. What are you thinking of particularly?
They don't sell Marmite.
Well, okay. Well, that means they probably cut their customer base in half if they did.
Now, Seb, you clearly are a big fan of Marmite, aren't you?
Oh, my God. So, yeah, no, honestly, if you watch that clip, it was a challenge for me. Never tasted it before, and I thought, let's go for it. I got advised that it was going to be very tasteful, and then I went for it. And honestly, who likes it?
Me. I love it.
For real?
Yeah.
I love the fact that you immediately went to the cupboard and got out a great big jar of Nutella.
Where are you, AD, on this? Are you love or hate?
I love Marmite. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean,
don't like Twiglets, bizarrely. So there you go.
Now, that is a little bit weird. No, it's, Seb, it's so versatile. You know, sandwiches, yes, toast, yes. But even things like flavouring, I don't know, if you're cooking a tomato sauce to go with pasta, it will go in that nicely. You can put it in bread. It's just anything. Please tell me you had a little bit.
You're talking to a Frenchman about cooking. Come on.
I know exactly. So, admittedly about Italian cooking. Please tell me you ate it like very, very sort of daintily, and you didn't spread it on like jam. Please tell me you didn't do that.
No, he was very dignified in this, and rather than prolong it, I would urge you to go onto YouTube. Just search for Seb Carow and Marmite. It will come up, and it's a very entertaining thing. But moving swiftly on.
No, I was going to say I've got to ask about off-pitch stuff here, because you know you can't actually been at the Albion without actually realising that the club was in off-field was in a certain amount of turmoil, and this was actually presented by the fact that you played in probably one of the worst professional stadiums in the country. So, one, when you arrived, were you aware of the issues? And two, once you got there, did you have them kind of thrust upon you?
Well, I knew back in 2005, I knew like unless I would have extended my contract with Brighton, I would never see light of that new stadium. And even I came back twice and I still haven't played once in it.
although the third time it was actually being built. So
yeah. It was because we, with Gus Poyet and the whole squad, we visited it.
And you thought you're just teasing me now. So, I mean, was it amongst the players that you were just trying to get on with your game, or did Dick Knight, or you know, sort of just try and rope you in with supporting as much as you could?
No, but do you know what? The Wisden Stadium, right? You guys say it might be the worst stadium in the UK. Yeah. It probably is. Don't get me wrong, it probably is.
Yeah.
But we tried to turn it into an advantage for us.
Mm-hmm.
So every game that we were playing at Wisden Stadium, it would like we would make it as hard and difficult as possible for the other team. And this way, other team, like they use, like I think I remember that expression was they used like it's a banana split, that stadium, just because we're gonna get there thinking it's an easy game, then we'll probably end up drawing or even losing. I think we made a lot of draw at that stage because we still went down that season.
Sure.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right.
I think we've had a lot of defeats, yes, but there's a lot of draw that could have turned into wins.
So we lost 22 games that year, which is pretty awful. But I mean, there was 17 draws that season.
17 draws. Half of them probably could have turned into a win and could have probably saved the club from relegation.
Sure.
Yeah. So no, yeah, maybe it was not the best stage in the UK, but we tried to turn into our advantage. This is the way we saw it.
Because I was going to ask you this earlier, actually. I mean, so obviously, when you're playing at somewhere like at Elland Road, obviously you've got the big crowd and everything around you, and with Dean, the noise kind of dissipated because there was no roof. There was nowhere for the noise to go. But when you're traveling around the country playing for the Albion, did you notice how many people were following the team around the country?
Yeah.
Because we'd sell out every single away end.
I was told before that Brighton had a very big fan base around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we've noticed it when we visited other places. The support that we have. One memory that I remember very clearly is that win against Crystal Palace at their own stadium.
Oh, we remember that.
2005.
Me.
Talk me through it, Seb.
And the feeling of that win. I think I got man of the match. I think I got it. I think I if it, don't remember that specific detail.
If you didn't, you can claim it now.
Yes. anyway, we just won just 1-0, but do you know that game? Because we know it's Palace, we know both teams, both football clubs probably hate each other.
Yep.
And playing at their place, beating them at their place at 7:45 kickoff on a Tuesday night. I think it was a Tuesday night.
Sounds about right.
That was just beautiful. It was a beautiful feeling. I think it was Paul McShane's goal. I think he had it.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Kind of came off his shoulder. But we'll let that go.
And Clinton Morrison had a late goal ruled out, didn't they?
Yeah. But I still got, even I talk about it, I remember the feeling playing I think it was 25,000 people there.
Yeah.
And if it was possible, half of it would be Brighton fans.
Oh,
but they wouldn't sell half of the stadium to Brighton's fans. But
no, but they could have done.
But they could have done, yeah.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm going to quickly look this up because I'm a cheat, but no one...
Well, it was one of those... Because, I mean, this came off the back because our record against Palace over the last few years hadn't been great. I mean, we hadn't played them an awful lot because, obviously, the clubs were moving in different directions. So... whilst we were trying to save the club, and actually Crystal Palace did help us do that, where they came to Fans United and everything else as well. But the rivalry is very, very real, but we never got to meet very often. So when we went to Selhurst Park, I think it was the season before, and we lost 5-0. Was that the year before?
No, it was two years before, because we'd gone down before. It was in our first stint, so it was 2002-03. Actually, I just looked it up. It was 20 years ago this month.
Yeah, so we were. So the fact to go there and to win and finally get one over on them, actually in their own backyard, was absolutely delightful. And I can remember it clearly. And actually, I mean, the club did actually release a DVD of what it's called, One Night at the Palace. I've got it. I've got it around somewhere.
And how fetching do you reckon you looked in Brighton's, what was it, fourth kit, Seb, which incidentally was all white. That was the sign of things to come, wasn't it?
I've still got the shirt that we
like. Brilliant.
Yeah, I still got it. Hey. One of my favourite.
don't tell Phil Shelley.
Why not?
Okay, but I mean,
hang on. I'm just going to quickly say that Phil Shelley's a good friend of ours. He's a football shirt collector. He's got hundreds. He used to have a website that had an online gallery of about 130,000 different shirts. And like I say, he's a collector. I think he's got every single Albion shirt that's been released, hasn't he, since about the 70s.
Pretty much.
And I think that probably does. I've got a feeling he's got Paul McShane's shirt
possibly,
on that night.
Possibly.
Phil, let us know.
But anyway, so we did get relegated that season. It's very sad. You had an offer to go to Leeds. Now, was Leeds the only one on the table? Or because there was a, I heard there was a possibility you might have gone back to France at that point.
No, it was Leeds, and Leeds was Birmingham first.
Okay. Birmingham City.
I had a call from Alexis Nicholas.
All right.
I think his agent said, could you have Seb's number because I've got a club for him. So he called me and said, I've got Birmingham, send me the offer. Just put me in touch with your agent so we could sort it. And so I put them in touch and never heard of Birmingham City because my agent said, we've got Leeds United.
I assume, I mean, at the time, the, when it, the season was drawing to a close, did the club not offer you anything? Or were you looking to sort of go somewhere else anyway?
Another year in his contract.
So when I signed for, I signed a 2-year deal.
Right.
The fact is, and I kind of feel, and that's probably one of my regrets. It's probably, don't know whether it is like, I should apologize for it, but Dick Knight, who has been fantastic with me, by giving me a chance to join the club and enjoy and feel welcome as much as I did back then, I had a clause in my contract. Stating that I could leave for free if the club were to be relegated.
Right.
And I did use that clause to leave the club for free. But it was at the time, it's a right move for me to go on a free to a club like Leeds United. Well, first, economically, you get more money, simple as. And you get probably, instead of having a 2-year deal, you get a 3-year deal. So it was the right move. But going back to how I felt welcome and how people make me feel, I would have rather the club to stay up and Leeds to pay, I don't know, £500,000, £1 million, whatever I was worth back then, so they could get something back.
Yeah, because the club really needed the money at the time. I mean, we were fighting court costs, we were fighting to get the new stadium built, we were like just really treading water. So at that particular moment, I didn't know. I mean, presumably Leeds knew about the clause.
Yeah, because that's the job of your agents, is to let the club know that you could come on a free. Yeah.
And but I mean, you did go there, and it was a relatively successful time. But I mean, Kevin Blackwell was the manager when you went there, but he wasn't there for very long.
That's how lucky and how quick football can be. So you've got a manager that takes you on a 3-year deal, telling you you're going to be all this or that, and then 2 months later, after pre-season, it is. So you got to start again with a new manager. I think I've known about 6 or 7 managers in 2 years at least, because I was released on my 3rd year. Well, I kind of left by mutual agreement, but honestly, in 2 years, it was ups and downs. I've enjoyed it overall, managed to enjoy it. I had a good spell when we went down League One with a minus 15 and administration.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, because, I mean, obviously, that was big news in football. I think it was the biggest points deduction a club had ever got at that particular moment in time. But from what I can work out from what the Leeds people were saying, it just created an us-against-them mentality, and it brought everyone together.
It did. You had about 5 to 8 players that had signed their contract, but they couldn't register it to the FA, so they were not getting paid for the first few months. But still, that whole situation brought some sort of togetherness. It was Leeds United against the rest of the world, basically.
I think that they've got that whether they're doing well or not.
But yeah, it wasn't the best time at the club, but on the football field, we never failed playing League One football because we had about like 32,000 people cheering us every single game. I think we got rid of that minus 15 in 5 games, go back to 0, and almost got promoted in the end.
Yeah.
So actually, let me cut across there, actually. I just want to, it's just that figure that Seb's talked about there. And I know that we've talked about it, AD, because when we go and see Worthing, we realise there's 2,000 people watching in tier, or 2,000 people who are watching in tier 6. I mean, is that a little bit of a cultural change as well, that in the third tier of English football, you can still get a 30,000 crowd, whereas probably across most places in Europe, you know, by the time you get to the third tier, you're probably talking sort of 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, aren't you?
Yeah, I've always said to my friends or to relatives back in France, I say, football here is like a religion. It's when people support a club, he goes through the whole family. So the dad supports Arsenal, the son will support Arsenal, and the grandson, and then so on.
Sure.
So basically, up to, honestly, you play League One, you play League Two, even you play like conference football, and you still manage to get some sort of crowd you would never get anywhere else in the world.
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, when the Albion aren't playing or they're not at home, AD and I and a few of our friends, we go and see Worthing. And you know that there's going to be a 2,000 crowd there, and this is Tier 6. And in fact, they've probably got something similar when they were in Tier 7.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've played around non-league in Yorkshire, haven't you? So, I mean, it'll be the same sort of attendance as you get up there. I mean, we'll come to that just before we finish. But I just wanted to move on because our time's getting on. Dennis Wise and a certain Gus Poyet came into Leeds to take over from Blackwell. Gus obviously really liked you.
Yeah, he did. That's probably because of him I played that much. Because if he was for Dennis Wise alone, and you know I love him, I wouldn't have played that much. I think we started off on the wrong foot when he joined the club. He had probably heard a few stuff about French players being lazy, being talented, so not working hard enough, which he just assumed from me. And it was just after a few weeks, or probably 3-4 weeks, we had an argument about fine. I was supposed to pay. Didn't want to pay it because I was angry. Yeah. And he said, how can we solve this? I said, give me a chance and I pay it. And he did. I played well.
We'll come back to Gus in a minute. You did leave Leeds, but it came to a bit of a sticky end there, I think. And somehow you ended up at Darlington.
Yeah, wow, I didn't even remember.
Well, we're looking at your Wikipedia page, so we know this.
Yeah. Darlington came when I left Leeds last week of the transfer window, the summer transfer window, 2008-2009.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Then I went to train just to keep fit with Sheffield United. Kevin Blackwell was the manager there at the time.
Okay, makes sense.
Then, honestly, I can't remember who was the manager at Darlington, but my agent called me and said, go there, keep fit and play. That was League Two football, wasn't it, at the time?
Probably, yeah. Was that in there? Was that in Feetham's, or they built their ridiculously outsized stadium?
It was in their really nice stadium.
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
No, it was a 25,000 seat stadium that held about that hosted about sort of 3,000 people on a good day.
You weren't at Darlow for too long because you came back to Brighton in January 2009. Mickey Adams was the manager in his second spell, but he was gone by February. So a similar situation to what happened at Leeds. I'm looking at the team when he made his debut the second time round, and oh my god.
I'd imagine it's
not my favourite team, Seb.
honestly, I don't remember it.
Oh god! So it was Sullivan. Well, Adam Virgo was in it, so that's a good. Adam Hinchwood was in it, and Tommy Elphick. But then you've got Jason Jarrett, like Chris Birchall, David Livermore, Calvin Andrew.
He was on loan from Palace.
Colin Hawkers.
He was on loan from Palace.
Kevin McLeod, Doug Loft. Mickey that season, I think he used 47 players throughout
his... All of them were on loan, and that includes Seb.
Yeah, because there's so many, because I mean, like Robbie Savage came in for a bit, and it just tried to throw everything at it, and just started throwing loan players at it over and over again.
I think probably I've got to add a little bit of historical context here. Is that when we got back to Brighton, AD, and this predates you, Seb, but you're kind of on the tail end of it, was when we got back here, because of the infighting that we'd had at the Goldstone and playing at Gillingham for 2 years, there was a zeitgeist, there was a bounce, and Dick Knight managed to sort of get a decent manager in who built a good squad, and we got back-to-back promotions against all odds. And that bounce continued until about probably 06, 07, something like that. And then, you know, there was the off-field stuff where people were questioning the future of the club on account of the fact that, you know, Lewis District Council and the government taking forever, and is this stadium ever going to get done and things like that. And I think that, you know, the momentum just kind of fell away a bit. And I think that the momentum that Dick had previously instilled from when he became chairman initially, 10 years previously, because we were expecting to be in the stadium by then, I think it was a case of, oh my God, we've got to hang on by our fingernails. And sort of like within a couple of years, then Tony Bloom had come on because, you know, we'd got the stadium, even though he was always in the background. So I think that the Albion was always struggling because it was seen that we weren't this exciting love story to football, if anything. We were these also-rans who were actually starting to get on everyone's wick with, when are we going to get our stadium? So, you know, and I think that the club suffered for it. I think the rest of football fell out of love with us a bit.
Yeah. But that said, though, Al, by the time he made his third debut for us.
Yes.
Basically, you went to Tranmere. You weren't there for very long. Was it a chance phone call you made to Gus to see if he wanted you?
No, Tranmere. I came, same again. I went back. So after Darlington, I think I went back to Sheffield United to train and keep fit. Then my agent called and said, go to Tranmere. That was, I think, who was the manager? Was it Barnes?
Couldn't tell you. Not a Tranmere. I don't know. I mean,
I think at that time
I can find out. But
anyway, it was only just a short spell. How long have I spent there? 2 or 3 months?
About 3 minutes.
It wasn't very long. You didn't play very much, but because you came back and we got through to the next round of the FA Cup, and your debut for the third time was at Villa Park.
In the FA Cup
with 6,000 Albion fans there. And you know the team that day. I'm just looking at it now. That was a lot of those players went on to play for us in the Premier League.
Certainly in the Championship, but yeah,
what was
the nature of your third? Your second return, your third visit of it then? I mean, was it a case of you had an agent just scouting around, and how come it was just so short? Were you out of favour with Gus? What happened?
No, it was just, this is probably why I retired so early. After I left Leeds, I'd never kind of been offered any long-term contract, which was really hard at some point to keep some sort of family stability. So left Leeds, and I had only short spell, Brighton twice, Tranmere, Darlington, went back to France, played for Nice for a bit. And I think I ended up at Bury in 2013, and then that was it. I had enough just because... So let's say after Leeds, my career went just downhill, and I was trying to save what was left of it, and I didn't even succeed at that. So...
Well, I think that's football's loss, to be fair, because honestly, I'm not blowing smoke. Well, I am blowing smoke at your backside here. I always enjoyed watching you play. You know, you were the first. Well, you were the next when we had our champion. You know, our title winning seasons. We had Paul Brooker. We had Nathan Jones, and they could sort of beat anyone for fun. And of course, they then went, and we needed someone else to fill that void. And certainly in that season, even if we went down, you came along and. You made us stand up and watch the game. You got the bums off the seats.
Well, it was exciting because, you know, we'd signed a player that had all been playing in the Champions League the year before. And this didn't...
No pressure.
We weren't signing players at that time. And it was like, you know, to have... It was like a sign of progress, and to have you come along, and it was exciting. Like Al said, you know, you've got people on their feet because as soon as you got the ball, you thought some magic was going to happen.
Yeah, so you just hit the afterburners and you went.
You could put the ball on the sixpences. It was just an absolute delight watching you. I mean, I haven't got the stats of how many assists you got, but
wasn't such a thing back in those days. You didn't have XG, you didn't have assists, you didn't have key passes. You just said, right, Seb, get on with it.
Yeah, it was, which is a shame about the football nowadays. I don't criticize. I mean, every generation's got their own kind of football. We have ours. Now everybody is about stats. They don't even watch football games anymore. They just watch highlights. Which is, I think, if I was playing now, because I wasn't the biggest goal scorer, or probably maybe my second year at Leeds where I've assisted a lot, but in terms of stats, I wasn't the greatest. I had some flair. I could make things happen. But if you look at the team sheet, the score sheet, my name wouldn't be in it.
But that's the point, isn't it? With modern day football now, if you're playing that game and you're playing the game that you played 20 years ago, I think more would be expected of you. You know, you get the bums off the seats. There'll be a bit of flair. But actually, while you're at it, listen, Sunshine, just because you're a winger does not mean you're not going to score.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, you'd have the heat maps and stuff, which you have now.
Oh,
and,
stop it, AD.
And, you know, and the progressive ball carries.
Oh, knocking off, would you? Listen, the main stat I'm thinking of that I'm taking from this show is that Seb signed for a 2-year deal, but you're supposed to do the 2 years in one go.
That's true.
Not come back and then, right, okay, it's like you're fulfilling a sort of a prison sentence, right? Come back and do a few more games there, and right, come back again, and then, right, great, you've filled up your second year.
I mean, but looking at things off the pitch, Seb, when you came back that third time, you must have looked at the club and thought, actually, this is going places now. The stadium's being built. The players that we had on that team, I mean, you know, Calderon was here. Gary Dick was here. Elliot Benny was here. Glenn Murray was here. It was, you know, it was, the players were 10 times better than they were when you first came.
Yeah.
And the standard was getting better. Gus had really managed to get a tune out of that team, and obviously the season after was the one we got the promotion.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Could you feel things were happening?
Yes. As soon as Gus Poyet joined the club, and he gave me that opportunity to join with him, I knew he can make things happen. The way he was just managing the whole squad and his vision for the club, you could feel that happening. To be fair, I could have been part. He invited me again for that 2010-2011 season, which I turned down because I think that was it. I did turn it down. Honestly, funny fact that people probably don't know, I never spoke about it. I was in my car driving down to get there, and I turned back down. I called Gus and I said, I can't make it.
Do you know what, AD? We've had players on before who only played for us for a short time. I'm thinking here of Hans Cray, and I'm thinking of David Clarkson and what have you. Brighton's history seems to be littered with players who regretted not staying. I mean, I'm not trying to be nasty here or anything, Seb, but do you look back on that and you think, oh my God, what was I thinking?
Yes. Yes, what was I thinking? Again, I must have been not in my right state of mind to have made that decision. I just thought the club was moving in one direction. I had my chances three times, didn't take it. So probably the fear of disappointment.
Wow.
Out of respect for the club, I just said, no, let them move on. Seb Carroll, it's over.
And you became Elliot Bennett instead.
And he's had a successful career, so
Elliot was sensational for us as well. But it was the same feeling watching Elliot play as it was watching you think things would happen. And you know, it was exciting. And you know, with you and the Glenn Murray that he became, that would have been a partnership, absolutely,
and unbelievably.
Well, thinking back, yes, I think so.
A Chris Wood came in that team, Ashley Barnes.
I know, AD, you're just rubbing. Well, I think we're just rubbing it in now because you know, we got Seb on with good intentions, and now I think we're going to start making him cry in a minute. So let's
move it on to coming. Basically, I mean, I said we were going to come back to this anyway. I mean, you clearly love just playing football, right? Because I mean, I'm looking at what you did, life after the Albion, and you played for Knaresborough Town, Bury, Guiseley, Harrogate Town, Bradford Park Avenue, Tadcaster Albion, never heard of them, Knaresborough again, And you just carried on. I mean, you obviously liked living in Yorkshire. You had your family there. Obviously, Keenan was at the Leeds Academy. And becoming a professional footballer himself.
That's a hell of a combination, isn't it? A French Yorkshireman.
It is. You should wait until you hear his accent when he speaks French.
What's his accent? Yorkshire, when he speaks English. I mean, how old was he when he first came to England?
Well, when we moved to Brighton, he was because West Ham was pregnant. So Brighton. When I found a place to live, my wife and Keenan joined me. He was about 13 months. Maybe.
Okay, so he's never really sort of. I mean, obviously, you taught him French because you know there's the French culture within your house. But did he sort of learn his English unaccented then?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it is. And my two other kids, they bilingual, but it's funny when they speak French because they speak French with a real Yorkshire accent and it's funny.
It's kind of like the Yorkshire Yen Mulby.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Well, yeah, I know what you mean. So you played all these places across the north of England and then eventually you thought, well, time to hang up the boot. So what did you go into straight after you finished playing?
So I've started a football academy in Leeds, which lasted for a year. I've enjoyed it. I was coaching kids from 8 to 12.
Uh-huh.
I started my coaching badge. And when I realized the pathway to get to the UFAA, I just gave up. Realistically, when you look at the number of minor ethnicity in the football industry, it's like you've got to be lucky. Because in football, it's not about you, what you can do, it's about who you know. So if you know a sporting director, you'll get a job. If you don't know anybody, you won't get a job, no matter how good you are coaching kids in the academy. So I just gave that up. One of my friends called me and said, let's start a football agency looking after players, which I did for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Then I took a step back, probably just after COVID. We lost a few players, and I was just disgusted by players and their family members because all they're after is money. Where I had a vision to develop people, develop players, and of course help them gain, being a better person and a better player, so I could look after a good, like a potential good career.
Sure.
But it's too hard to manage players and their family.
But sorry, let's just take you back one minute there. Right? I mean, maybe I've misheard you there, but are you saying that? And it's I know it's a constant topic of conversation, even in 2025. Are you saying that it was a bit of a colour bar for when you were trying to do your A for coaching badges?
Nothing wrong's been done to me. I could have done it. It's just me. Statistically speaking, if you don't know someone who can give you a job after you've got your certificates, no matter how good you are, you won't get a job.
Sure.
It's a sad fact, but in football, it's more really who you know. Even as a scout, if you're a scout within the football, like the professional football industry, if you don't know a head scout or a football director, you won't get a job, or you won't get paid for it.
So when you got to just before COVID, you dropped the agency. So obviously, virtually everyone had to mark time for about 18 months. So in the past 3 or 4 years, what have you been up to?
I think that's I've been lucky. I've been given an opportunity to work with First Travel Solution, which is a transport company. I've applied to be just a simple controller, which is any given job. It's an office job where you transport people. And
logistics.
Yeah, I did apply to be just a controller to start with, but they gave me a manager position straight away, which I enjoyed. I've learned a lot about, because you've got to understand, you come from a specific industry, which is football, where you can talk a certain way, you've been taught a certain way how to deal with people, which is absolutely not how to deal with people within a normal job. Yeah, you can't talk to people the way you were talking to your manager, the way your manager was talking to you. your manager, if you're rubbish, he'll tell you straight, you're rubbish, you're not playing this weekend. Go and do down an office job and see if you go HR behind your back. So I learned, that was a big, massive learning curve for me, which I enjoyed. I've been with the company for 6 years now.
Right.
I'm now an ops manager. I enjoy. I've got I manage contract for airline company like EasyJet or Wizz Air or Air France, which is kind of nice because what you're looking for, what I'm looking in a job is that rush of adrenaline, which I have with this job.
Is that your
right amount of pressure? It's not the same as going over the white line, though, is it?
Come on, can't be. But
I was about to say, you're still not an old man. I mean, AD's an old man, and I'm really old. But are you?
Thanks.
Are you? You're in your 50s, mate. So you're old.
That's my birthday next week, mate. Week today.
Slam crash. Are you missing football?
I used to. I can explain why. Football used to be my life and my life only. This is my first love. Don't tell that to my missus.
Well, to be fair, football was first. Football was there
first.
Yeah,
football was first. Yeah, all honesty, football was first. And even after I retired professionally, I still wanted to play as much as possible. First, because I've got all the player that unfit now said, as long as you got your legs, enjoy them. So play as much as you can, as long as you can.
Yeah.
So I did. Then I got injured last year. So I had a 12, 13 years career, didn't have any major injury, and go back to play darts football on a Thursday night. And I did my knee last year.
Oh, dear.
So done that. Took me eight months to recover.
Ouch.
It takes longer when you're old.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's just move it back to the present day, though, because obviously Brighton are playing Leeds this weekend. You're two old clubs. Climate has completely changed from when you played for both. Obviously, both now back in the Premier League. When you look at the Albion now, are you amazed at how far they've come? You know, the European adventure, competing at the top end of the Premier League.
Can you even see it as the same club?
I'm not surprised. No, it's not the same club. Honestly, you can't. Like, you can't compare when I was there and the clubs now. I mean, the progress that they've done on and off the pitch is just unbelievable. I think it's down. You've got to give credit to the owners. Is it Tony Bloom?
Tony Bloom.
Got to give credit because he's built an empire with Brighton. When you've got the chance to promote yourself into that Premier League, there's a big job coming, even a bigger that's been promoted, which is stabilize the club there. And he did it. And I think when you bring the right people in, and I think that's the main task of a chief executive or owner or chairman, is to identify talents. And when you surround yourself with good people, with the right people, it brings your company or your clubs further. And that's what he did. He surrounded himself with the right people at the right time.
Sure.
And even today, if you look at the scouting and recruitment policy that Brighton have, they always get players that people are not after. They don't go for £90 million players.
Seb Carroll, is he still available?
I could be.
Okay. Well, we've got to talk to you about Jorginho Rutter then, because obviously fellow Frenchman, signed from Leeds.
Yeah.
What do you make of Georgie?
He's a great player. I've always said it. I've always enjoyed watching him. I don't personally know him. I've known of him since he was at Rennes before he went to Hoffenheim. And when he joined Leeds, I received DMs from all the players saying, like, because I'm French and I've played for the club, how good is this kid? And I say, trust me, he's really good. He's going to make, like, he's going to do good to the club. And he started off really bad. And honestly, not because he's not a good player, but you've got to give that kid time to settle. He doesn't speak English.
This sounds a bit familiar, Seb.
It is familiar. I understand the situation because that was me 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So you've got to, like I was telling people, give him time. He's joined, I think, in January, in the January transfer window. I said, give him that 6 months. He'll come back a new player after preseason, which he did.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh my God. And how much did we, like, did Leeds sold him for a million?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he's been good for you guys as well.
I enjoyed watching him play.
I mean, obviously, because I mean, when you were playing for the Albion, like I said, we were treading water. We're kind of like on our uppers a little bit. So the fact that the roles are being reversed and like Leeds are selling players to Brighton now for big money, it's you see that as a role reversal?
Well, it could be. Anything can happen in football. I think Brighton's got to stick to what they know best, which I agree with. I like football clubs that go for young talent and bring them in so they can, like, it's not a trading club. I mean, they don't go for £5 million player and trying to turn them into £16 million, which is it's a good business model. I think you need more than that if you want to compete in the European competition.
Yeah.
You need to go for a like, bigger player, established player, experienced player. But like the way they go and take and sign players, I think it's the right philosophy. It's not just based on stats, data, because data is a big part of the game now. You go football clubs, they're going to go to a screen and filter down to, I want a winger that put 20 crosses in. I don't care how good the crosses are. I just want a winger that crosses 20 times. So, and I think that's a wrong way. That's a wrong approach. I think we must use the data, but not just recruit on just this aspect.
Well,
and I think Brighton doing a kind of, they go both ways. They use the data and they still scout physically. Well,
So listen, we've got to wrap up soon because otherwise people will find this podcast too long. There's just two questions I've got left for you.
Yeah.
One, have you been to the Amex yet?
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I think Gus was still a manager.
Wow, that is a long time ago.
Yes.
Well, please, please, please don't make yourself a stranger. I know you appreciate you're up in Yorkshire and what have you, but please make yourself known down here. You know, spend a weekend down here. And you've got lots of friends here, mate, believe me.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Appreciate
and
that.
And secondly, and I always sign off with something like this from someone who's been away for a while. Now, appreciate what you've told us so far, but in the scheme of your career and the scheme of your working life, what does Brighton and Hove Albion mean to you?
Oh, so I'm going to say what I say to everybody. It means a lot. People ask me one question is, where did I enjoy my football most? I can't answer that question right because I've enjoyed Monaco for some reasons. I've enjoyed Brighton for some other reason, and I've enjoyed Leeds for some other reasons. So this is the three clubs in my career where I really, no matter how much downtime I had there, they're still like all clubs are still there.
So the fact we're in the top three is good enough for me.
Yeah, no, it is. No, definitely. I mean, it's because you don't know how much the club made me feel welcome when I joined. But I remember it, even 20
you're
years
still
ago.
Welcome for that. You're
still welcome.
Yeah, we're quite thank good you. At giving you like old players a got a job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that the Albion need a logistics manager.
Yeah.
I might be in touch then.
Brilliant.
I do have one question before we go.
Yes.
It's because I've been talking to Alex Frutos, which was a Brighton with me 20 years ago. So sure. It's basically our 20 years anniversary this year. And I've scored which I think was a goal of the season that year against Hull City, just before Christmas. And Alex Frutos thinks it's his goal against Leicester in February. So we're going to have a little contest. I don't know if you guys remember the goals. I can send you the clips.
It was good against Hull City. It was an absolute pearl, right in the top, right where the spiders live.
It was, wasn't it?
And it was like, that was sensational. I mean, Alex scored some. He scored some nice goals. There was one. There was one in a game against Northwich Victoria. I mean, you've got to look at the opposition as well, right? So,
well, I remember actually getting upset with him for missing an easy header to make it 9-0.
But you know, I mean, tell him to go and move some furniture.
That's what he does.
Huh?
That's what he does.
I know.
Oh, all right. Okay. I thought you were. No.
Yeah.
No.
AD knows absolutely everything about every single ex player, and it's quite scary.
He apparently he lives in Lille, and he opened a furniture business, which is still going well for him.
it's really going well. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. There you go.
Yeah, it's really going. But yeah. Just so you know, we're going to have a little contest. We're going to post it online and we're going to let people vote because we need a decider. We've been arguing for the past 20 years, teasing each other on who deserves goal of the season. I'm pretty sure it should be me. It's sure it should be him, but we're going to let the people decide.
Yeah, do it.
We'll do it. Dig out the footage and we'll put it up there and we'll put it out there. Absolutely.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, that's it. That's all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Seb Carroll for joining us. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Raw on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. See you then. Bye.
Cry. But if you leave me, I will surely die.
Darling, there will never be another, 'cause I love you.